It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios with you this morning, and we are just, 4 days away from the election, which is coming up on Tuesday, and I don't think there's anyone who's hearing the sound of my voice that does not know that. We expect the voting turnout to be extraordinary. Now, whether that is good news or bad news, I don't know. We just heard this, that the Wisconsin Republican Party is reporting that hackers have stolen $2.3 million from an account that they had dedicated to Trump re-election. So the dirty tricks are going to be, and it's, I guess tricks is probably going to be innocent compared to what we are likely to see in the next few days. I've asked someone to join us this morning who's right in the thick of all of it. He serves on our behalf in Congress. He is the chairman, the new chairman of the Freedom Caucus, which, as you know, I've told you many times, those guys are my heroes. And so I'm looking forward to having just a few minutes here with Congressman Andy Biggs from the 5th District in the great state of Arizona. Congressman, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Sandy. Good to be with you.
Yeah, so we have to start with Arizona. I mean, I'm hearing all kinds of things. I heard a prognostication yesterday that Martha McSally is probably not going to win, and some people are not even sure President Trump is going to win. I would really like to know what you think.
Well, I think the maybe 6 weeks ago that would have been true. But with President Trump, what we've seen is the intensity and enthusiasm on the ground here is fantastic. The votes are coming back. The Democrats have a slight edge on the early ballots, but that is dissipating day by day. I fully expect President Trump to win Arizona by probably 3.5 points. Martha McSally's in for a very tight race. She's probably dead even right now. And if President Trump does win by 3.5 points, I would assume and believe Martha will win that re-election. That's critical to the country. No better examples of why is the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearing and the Amy Coney Barrett confirmation hearing. But I feel confident that Arizona is going to re-elect President Trump and actually help preserve the Senate for the country.
Well, and my impression is, and you would know, that Arizona actually has a pretty tight system on their voting. Is that true, or do you expect there to be some chicanery?
Well, there's some shenanigans going on right now, but we are pretty tight compared to most because we've been doing mail ballots for more than two decades. We have a system in place. We know how to do it. And we have lots of poll watchers out there. We've got lots of lawyers on call. But there's stuff happening every day that I hear about, and the party here, together with the Trump campaign, is trying to fight that. Some of it we have to take in court, others of it we have to go forward. But the biggest county is Maricopa with over 5 million people, and the election official in charge is a Democrat, and he kind of fiddled around with some stuff last time, and looks like he's doing that this time. We just have to be vigilant and fight it through.
I just want to make clear here, I've alluded to this, but I want to give people an idea of who the Freedom Caucus is. And let me give some backdrop. I have to say that for all of my years in D.C., it has been like a gut punch to see how clueless and uninspired members of Congress are. And that goes for Congress as well as the Senate. It's just astounded me in meeting after meeting how little they really understand about the urgency. And the urgency has been there for a couple of decades. It's not just now, except there's more now. And so the Freedom Caucus came along at a time when suddenly there was a group of men, mostly men, who actually understood the dangers that we face. And they were Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows and Matt Gaetz and Louie Gohmert and others whose names don't come to my mind in this moment. But these guys were on fire, and they came out and showed such tremendous courage. And one of them was, of course, our guest, Congressman Biggs. If you were to describe yourself, Congressman, what distinguishes you from, let's say, others? I'll just pick on Republicans for a second. In the House of Representatives, what else would that include?
Well, I think that we are movement conservatives. We are platform conservatives. We are principled conservatives. We believe that we're representing people whose voices hadn't otherwise been heard in Congress because of what I call the uniparty. We're not career politicians. We're in there punching and fighting. And, you know, what we're seeing is an attempt to take over this country by the leftists. And sometimes we have colleagues that sometimes inadvertently acquiesce to that, and we don't. If you begin looking at us, you're going to see the voices of conservatism who believe this country was founded by and organized under the hand of God, and that God continues to preserve this nation, but only so long as we try to be a moral and righteous people. And so I think that that's what you're going to see coming out of the Freedom Caucus, just consistent fighting on behalf of our freedoms.
You know, and nowhere has that ever been displayed better than in the last few years here, or the last nearly 4 years of President Trump's administration, when you guys have been on the front lines of fighting, trying to get information, holding people accountable, you know, through the hearings, Peter Strzok, and through the impeachment. You guys are the ones with the fire, and that's why I have such respect. Now, there is an election going on, not just for president. There's an election for people in Congress. The Republicans don't hold Congress. The Democrats do. And there's, what, a 30-seat difference? Is that right? Something like that?
Yeah, that's right. It's probably about 32
okay.
Seat difference. And, yeah.
All right, country, yeah, there are others running, as you said to me, and I will explain quickly, some people cannot declare their interest in the Freedom Caucus because there's punishment. Before this whole business of impeaching Trump, I've known, you know, let's just say leadership has withheld money for offices, money for campaigning. There's punishment. You guys have really paid a price for being part of this caucus, and so some people are hesitant to identify. Okay, so that being the case, can you tell us about who's running where that people should be aware of that might possibly be aligned with the Freedom Caucus?
Yeah, I can give you some that have publicly announced that they're going to run and want to be in the Freedom Caucus. So, of course, we have incumbents. You've got David Leichert in Arizona, Chip Roy.
Wait.
You've got Scott Perry. But some new people, Lauren Boebert in Colorado 3 has announced she's going to come in. Marjorie Taylor Greene in Georgia is going to come in. And there are others. So you have Bob Good in Virginia, Nick Freitas in Virginia. You've got a whole host of others that are Jim Marshak in Nevada has said publicly he's going to come in, and several others, and quite frankly, it looks like we're going to have between 6 and 10 new members, depending on how next Tuesday boils out. But you know that some people who are going to be in the Freedom Caucus at this point, they need money from leadership. Sometimes it's not forthcoming as much as it otherwise would to help support their election. They want to get on committees that they think are to help their constituency and the country and that they have expertise in. Sometimes they don't get on those committees because of your membership in Freedom Caucus, and then there's some other stuff that goes on. But we've worked better with the establishment folks than we ever have before, because when you're in the minority, everybody begins to look a little bit like a Freedom Caucus person, because it's easier to be conservative when you're in the minority than it is when you're in the majority and actually have to govern as a conservative.
Yes, and I actually think that these horrendous events of the last nearly 4 years have in some ways shaken people in ways that I've never seen them shaken before, and that goes for the Senate too. I'm glad to see that awakening, because I do feel like Congress has been asleep at the wheel, and that's the kindest way I know how to say it. And so I'm sort of grateful for the trauma, because I do think it's broken down the barriers some. Let Chip Roy is in the fight of his life. He's running against the Barbie doll of the Planned Parenthood group, and that's Wendy Davis. And Chip needs a lot of help down in Austin. Bob Good in Virginia is being targeted by millions of dollars. His opponent is a black doctor who presents beautifully, but worked for Barack Obama and has policies that are way, way, way over on the left. But Bob is seeing millions of dollars come in to support his opponent. Are you seeing this in other races as well?
Oh, yeah. We don't have a race where we're not being outspent of about 5-6 to 1. And that's just everywhere in the Republican Party, whether you're a Freedom Caucus person or not. Because it seems the Democrats have an almost endless pot of money, and Republicans less so. And so, I could just go race after race and tell you that, Bob Goods is a great example of millions coming in. Nick Freitas, we've done better at keeping it close. I've got Chip Roy's getting outspent. Scott Perry's being outspent probably 2 or 3 to 1. David Schweiker, probably 5 to 1. Lauren Boebert, probably 2 to 1. Yvette Harrell in New Mexico is running. She's getting outspent 2 to 1. It's just that's consistent across the country, whether you're Freedom Caucus Republican or just a regular Republican.
Is there a list, a website that you guys have that sort of you lay out your candidates that you're supporting?
Well, Freedom Caucus technically and ethically can't endorse anyone, but there is a political action committee that works with us a little bit, and they're called House Freedom Fund. And if you go to housefreedomfund.com, you're going to find candidates that are endorsed by the House Freedom Fund.
Okay. All right. So that's helpful for people that are interested in helping. All right. So I ask this question a lot. I never get a good answer, but I'll ask you too. You say maybe 32 seats down in the House. Nancy Pelosi currently runs everything, and we know what that means. I don't need to fill in the blanks. We've seen what it means. Is there any chance at all, do you think, that Republicans should take back the House?
Yeah, I do. I do think there's a chance. I think there's just basically two options that are going to happen on Election Day. I think President Trump has a chance for a real red wave across the country. I think he's going to win the National Electoral College. The question is, does he bring up some of these other races that are close? We've got 30 races in the country I'm watching that are within 1 or 2 points on either side. And the question is, does he bring those up? In one scenario, he does, and we take back the House. It'll be close, because we have to get 17 seats. It'll be close. And then another scenario, we don't get it back, but it's still close. So we're a few down in one scenario, or we're a few up in another scenario. So, yes, I do think there's a chance. And like you say, the biggest rationale for people getting out and voting for Republicans is if you want another couple of years like we just had under Nancy Pelosi's leadership, then give us a divided government again with President Trump. And Nancy Pelosi's already planning impeachment along with her henchmen, Jerry Nadler and Adam Schiff.
Yes. I also think that I think Americans are crying for accountability for, I would say, the evildoers. I can't think of a kinder way to say it, that we have seen operating this last nearly 4 years. It is disgraceful what's happened in our country. And we have so far not seen nearly enough people held accountable. And so if that's going to happen, Congress is going to have to be held by people that are willing to do that. Congressman Andy Biggs, Arizona 5th District, Chairman of the Freedom Caucus. Congressman Biggs, thank you. It's nice to meet you this way, and hopefully look forward to seeing you in person in D.C. All right, thank you, sir. Sandy Rios.
Absolutely.
In the morning
on
AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
powerful organs of the state are not merely corrupt, but that they've been weaponized to go after perceived domestic enemies. And that's very scary.
Our constitutional democracy enshrines the peaceful transfer of power.
We are now all rooting for his success. The peaceful transition of power is one of the hallmarks of our democracy.
We don't live in the United States of America as any of us would like to understand it.
We have a peaceful transition of power process. That's not what happened.
They interviewed General Flynn, and they did it in what was a complete ambush.
I thought it's early enough. Let's just send a couple guys over.
And the audience was, ha, 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 ha. How funny to set up an innocent man.
This is what third world security states do. They spy on their political opponents like this.
This is part of a concerted Russian influence operation.
Russian interference.
They colluded. They were in on it.
He would constantly say, I have seen evidence of collusion.
Until this is released, I can't comment.
I can't go into the particulars.
Russians, I'm not going to be specific.
He knew he could just say it on TV and then hide behind, well, it's all classified, I can't get into it.
Well, it's classified, you can't see it.
Collusion, you just got to be willing to see it.
New York's Daily News ran this front page, Trump is Hitler.
How could 62 million Americans vote for Hitler? Are 62 million Americans Nazis?
We really almost thought it was a joke. Like, really, you're not going to accept that you lost this election?
Then they see the Russia collusion narrative sitting right there in front of them and say, why don't we just say that he cheated?
It divided the country in ways that people can't imagine. It's inspired massive violence. It's given people who are bad faith actors a license to do whatever they want because they literally feel like they're fighting Russian spies and Nazis.
Russiagate has been the most egregious abuse of everything that was supposed to have been good about our government.
The thing that they were investigating the Trump campaign for is what they themselves were doing.
Sandy Rios with you. That's a trailer from a new movie. It's actually a documentary. It's called The Plot Against the President. And certainly you probably heard voices that you're familiar with because we've talked about this certainly enough over this past nearly 4 years. It is probably one of the most shocking things I've ever experienced in my lifetime. And I've been following politics for a very, very long time. There's a documentary that's just out. You are able to see it, and that's why I wanted to bring it to your attention. How many times have you said to yourself, that is so complicated, I can't explain it. I don't even know how to tell my neighbors, my friends, I can't. It's the kind of thing that you, how could you believe people when they try to tell you what has actually happened to the American government and the deep state going after its own president? It's very difficult to do, but this is exactly what this documentary does. And we have the director with us today. Her name is Amanda Milius. And in this movie is featured Devin Nunes, Richard Grickernell, and Donald Trump Jr., and many, many others. You heard lots of voices that you were familiar with. So Amanda Milius, the director, thanks for joining us this morning, Amanda.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I'm so glad you liked the trailer and the film.
Oh, I do. I've yet to see the film, but I'm going to.
Oh, okay. Well, then you're in for a treat.
I don't doubt that. I will be thrilled actually to watch it. Amanda, let me just say that your background is really interesting, because you're an interesting blend of someone who's been raised in the arts world, the movie production world, who has gone into really the center of the storm in D.C. Actually worked yourself in the State Department. And there's a lot of questions there from me. I'll tell you. You were born in Los Angeles. Your father is John Milius, and people will recognize his work if they don't recognize his name. He was the producer of Apocalypse Now, of Dirty Harry, of Conan the Barbarian, and also Red Dawn, right? And
yes,
that's one.
He actually wrote Apocalypse Now, and he directed and wrote the other films that you mentioned. And then he wrote the first two Dirty Harrys as well, which a lot of people love. A lot of memorable lines from there. But yeah, no, he was a very unusual person for Hollywood because, you know, he was very outspoken about his conservative politics and he was on the board of the NRA. He was very not shy about talking about his political point of view, which if we can, it's hard to even imagine a time where that was possible now. I don't think if he was just beginning his career now, I don't think that he would be able to be a mainstream writer and director and be as vocal about his politics as he was.
Yeah, I think you're right. Is he still living?
Yes, he is. He's retired. He lives in Los Angeles. And he is, you know, spending his time. He goes shooting every weekend still. And with my mom, which is hilarious because they've also been divorced for 30 years, but they go shooting every weekend. No one gets hurt. It's amazing.
Now that's a story.
yeah. So they're a funny bunch. But he's very interested in the news. He's very up on what's going on. You know, he's outraged at what has happened as much as anybody. And you know, he asks me all the time when I come back. When I come back to California, he always asks me what's going on in D.C. He wants to hear the inside scoop. And he always says, why? You know, why hasn't anybody been prosecuted? How has this been allowed to happen? And he's, you know, he's got the same questions that everybody does. And, you know, I think this movie at least goes to address what happened. You know, if I certainly can't answer the why, because we tried to a little bit, but you know, it's hard to say why there hasn't been justice.
Yes, well, just a personal question, because you know sometimes parents have important jobs, but the kids really don't enter into it. So, like, dad goes off to work, and he does all these incredible things, but he comes home, he's just dad, or you have a family, and you don't think about it too much. Were you fascinated and absorbed in his work, or were you removed from it?
Well, I was actually pretty removed from it for a couple of reasons. I mean, you don't really bring kids to movie sets. I guess some people do. We didn't really do that too much. Also, you know, my parents are, my dad's a lot older than my friend's parents. By the time I was, like the age where you would work on film sets, I think he was pretty cool, wasn't really directing very much anymore. He was mostly just writing. You know, I kind of missed that period of time. My brothers who are older than I am, worked on film sets a little bit more than I did. However, obviously we were around it a lot. And I think, you know, he exposed all of us to like a certain, to the kinds of movies that he liked to watch. And so there was always stuff like that going on around. Like, you know, anytime I spent time with him, he was watching something and it would always be like a Western or some historical drama or something like that. It wasn't like he was putting kids movies on, for us. So it was definitely, and you know, we talked about film a lot. We talked about writing, we talked about all that stuff. So it's like, it wasn't like I was like working on every year he was doing a different movie, like some directors and I was working on film sets, but I did start working in the industry at a really young age. And I think that was also very helpful because, you know, you learn everything from the ground up.
Yes. And obviously you've got the gene, and I don't mean just the bug. You went to school, New School University, focusing on philosophy and film. How very interesting. But that makes sense now. But obviously you have the talent too.
Well,
Amanda.
I went to USC Film School for grad school, which is, you know, the New School is a really bizarre university, to be honest with you. It's probably only a testament to the fact that I was a very bad student, that I didn't turn out a communist, because, you know, if your kids are not the greatest students, you know, sometimes maybe that's a good thing. But especially these days in universities, I mean, you almost don't want them to be good students because they're getting indoctrinated. But anyway, then I went to USC Film School for grad school, and that's really where that's like the real, you know, training I actually had.
Okay. So you had, besides the influence of your dad, and you, and then you knew good stuff, and you obviously had the talent. So then, you, at what point did you come to D.C. and start working at the State Department, right?
Well, so what I did is I had gone to USC Film School. I was touring my thesis film, which is kind of what you do for your master's degree. You make a thesis film, and you submit it to film festivals. And that's kind of the traditional way to kickstart a career in film. And so I had this short film that was doing pretty well. It got into like 40 film festivals. And so some of those you attend in person. And so I wasn't working consistently for about 6 months because I would have like 3 weeks in LA and then a week in whatever city the film festival's in. So I had a little bit of time off. And what I did is I started volunteering for the campaign because this was in 2015, 2016. And I was getting really, really interested in politics. I mean, I was always interested in politics, and I was always, I would say, kind of a Trump Republican. I wasn't much of a Bush Republican. I wasn't very interested in politics back then either. But it was always kind of there. And but then as probably around 2008, 2009, things really started to heat up. I just got really obsessed with politics. And by the time 2015, 2016 rolled around, I just wanted to see it up close. And I loved President Trump since the moment he came down the escalator. I was completely on board. Immigration was my most important issue. And so I was just totally swept up, and I loved it. So I went and I volunteered during my time off while I was doing this film stuff. And then it just started, you know, snowballing. I started working with the campaign. They eventually hired me. And then when we won, I figured I would just go back to California and just, you know, trudge along and not tell anybody I volunteered for the campaign and go back to making films. But I was approached by some folks that were, you know, more senior into the campaign. And they said, hey, are you going to sign up to work in the administration? Like, you should do that. And I was like, no, that's crazy. I have zero experience in politics. I never studied any of this. And why would they want me to work in the government? Like, what am I going to do? And they were like, no, that's what we need. We want people who are loyal to the president's agenda, who understand it, and who want to, you know, it's like your duty, really. Like, go help the president accomplish his goals. And I was totally convinced by that. And I was just like, yeah, it was just so much more of a fulfilling thing to do than to go try to hammer out a career in Hollywood and not be able to speak my mind or tell anybody how I really felt, especially while this incredibly important administration was taking shape. And I just thought it was too exciting and important. And so I ran off. I first got hired on the inaugural committee, which is a great place to transition into government during administrations. I encourage all young people that are really interested in politics and might want to work in government or for an administration to always try to, you know, volunteer for campaigns and work on the inaugural committee. Was an amazing transition. So I did that, moved to D.C. to an apartment I'd never seen, and then I got hired at the State Department as a political appointee. And I was in there from the beginning, and I ended up becoming the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Content at the State Department Public Affairs, which was perfect because I'm overseeing content development, which is what I do. So I kind of had the perfect job in government. So I was doing that for 3 years, and we did material for supporting all the president's foreign policy initiatives, you know, opening the embassy in Jerusalem. For that.
Wow.
Pulling out of the Iran deal, this huge Iran initiative, which was super successful, and China, just all of the different, you know, priorities of the administration, I was able to shape content to reflect those for the rest of the world, which was really exciting.
Okay, so Amanda, then you have this great experience at the State Department, and at what point did someone say, look at all this stuff that's happened with Russiagate, we should make a movie? Whose idea was that?
Well, basically what happened is Lee Smith, who's the author of the book, is part of my extended kind of group of friends and people that I know. I knew a lot of the people that I interviewed in the film, And it just became clear that I had to do it. I mean, I initially was just going to produce the movie after we optioned Lee's book, but I realized that there was no other way to do it besides to direct it myself, because I just didn't think, I didn't want to put it in anybody else's hands. So that's how it started. And, you know, it's just, the response has just been incredible. And we did it in less than 100 days, which is insane.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, listen, we have to hear more about that. And I want to know more about how you put this together, what the elements were, the obstacles, what you think you achieved, how people can watch it, all of those kinds of things. My guest is Amanda Milius, and of course, she's the director of this new movie. It's a documentary, The Plot Against the President. Yes, I've only seen the trailer myself, and I can't wait to watch it. It just looks, how could it not be compelling? But it also has to be done well, and I think Amanda has certainly managed to do a brilliant job. All right, so we'll talk about that when we return. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
There was an illusion being created using the most awesome tools and the greatest tricks that the American intelligence community had learned to use against our enemies. Now it was being deployed against the American people and our president.
This is the biggest political scandal in modern history, which makes Watergate look like a tiff.
The FBI director has no credibility.
The left used to not trust the FBI, and now they love them.
This can happen to General Michael T. Flynn. Imagine what they do to anybody who has a single strike against them.
35 Russian diplomats in the U.S. expelled.
The prosecution of General Flynn wasn't a pursuit of criminal activity. It was a setup.
Flynn actually had details. So he was talking about going after people's budgets. They were terrified.
Media didn't start as neutral. Media hasn't been neutral all its life.
The two faces of Hillary Clinton are coming out. The fact, through WikiLeaks, that she says one thing and...
Oh, no.
They worked hand in glove with Comey to try to delegitimize Trump. They were not there to tell the truth.
A political dirty trick is being carried out by our intelligence community.
Honestly, none of us really know, sort of holistically, what to think about this dossier.
They went into Congress. They said, there's nothing here. Doesn't matter. We'll keep going with FISA. We'll keep going with the investigation. And more importantly, we will go on TV day in and day out and lie to the American people to their face. And nothing's going to happen to us.
The nation and all of our freedoms hang by a thread. And the military apparatus of this country is about to be handed over to scum who are beholden to scum. Russian scum.
We had not one person claim that they had or had seen evidence of Trump colluding with the Russians.
Devin Nunes was the hero in the forest. He was alone, he was mocked, he was attacked.
Devin Nunes was subject to such scorn for saying the conclusions that we brought forth in that report, which all proved to be true.
Russiagate was a false story.
To target their political opposition.
To carry out their insurance policies.
I believe that this is a conspiracy.
These guys have perpetrated the greatest crime against the American people ever seen. It was a coup d'etat.
This is how sick and twisted these people are.
I recently confirmed that on numerous occasions, the intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involved in the Trump transition.
It was shocking to see some of the overclassification that was done to hide either corruption or abuse of authority and just to make sure certain agencies didn't look bad.
We have a peaceful transition of power process. That's not what happened. There were more meetings, there were more leaks, there were more attacks.
The thing that they were investigating the Trump campaign for is what they themselves were doing, not just the Democratic Party and their operatives, but also the FBI.
If I were writing about the time frame that we lived in and that we're living in now, I would say it wasn't supposed to happen. They weren't supposed to know.
The entire time this was going on, they thought this was going to be what sunk the Donald Trump presidency. And they were just looking for the golden goose, and they still haven't found it because it doesn't exist.
Sandy Rios, back with you. If you didn't know better, you would think that that was some Hollywood blockbuster. Actors hired some intricate story written for us, a screenplay to intrigue us, and we would talk about, eat popcorn, and tell our friends to go see that exciting movie. And yet, I have to say, that is the sound from a new documentary called The Plot Against the President. Those are real people with real voices, and this happened to us. Many of us had a front row seat. We watched it happen, and now it's been put all together in this documentary, which, as I understand, you can see right now on Amazon Prime. The director is with me. Her name is Amanda Milius. Amanda, they can watch it right now. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, it's out.
Yes,
it's on Amazon Prime for rent, purchase, and if you're a Prime member, it's free.
Okay, excellent. All right, so we did recognize a lot of those voices. Devin Nunes, Donald Trump Jr., of course, General Flynn. Rick Grinnell.
And Sidney Powell, the wonderful Sidney Powell.
Yes. My audience certainly knows Sidney. So now here's the thing. When you create something like this, Amanda, it's so complex. To make a story out of all of the machinations and the tributaries and the Mueller report and the, you know, the hearings and the television views and General Flynn. And I mean, really, I would think this is just overwhelming. How did you undertake to make it make sense?
Well, what we did is, you know, we had kind of a simple roadmap, which to start was Lee Smith's book, which focuses on the investigation and seeing this story and the evidence unfold from the eyes of the people who investigated the investigators, you know, that the Devin Nunes Operation Medusa team and his staff, Jack Langer, Cash Patel, and the people that saw this firsthand. There's actually a couple of unidentified interviews in there, people that were working in the White House at the time, or speaking about people that were working there at the time, and talking about previous intel occurrences and things that had gone on that people know about that haven't really heard from anybody firsthand about, and setting the stage with that background, and then going into Flynn's background and why the Obama administration was so against General Flynn. And why he was such a threat to them. And so we had these basic premises that we wanted to explore. And then we just sat down with these people that were either there, firsthand sources, the congressmen who were involved in the report and exposing this, or media experts who were actually correct, like people like John Solomon, Tom Fitton, who were actually correct about what happened, and listening to them and their story of how they got it right, and basically just let people go. I mean, we had 70 hours of footage, and the first cut of the movie was 4.5 hours long, and we just had to drill it down to the most important elements that helped, you know, tell the story from a simple A to B to C format, because the story is complex enough. And really what you see when you get the 30,000 foot view, when you see it all laid out in 90 minutes, you really see the chess move of the opposing side, right, of the administration, and then of the advancing kind of plot. You really only see it when it's all laid out together.
Mm. Amanda, one of the central characters, of course, is Devin Nunes. I don't think many of us will forget that day that he went over to the White House and was looking through this information in the basement and then came right out and looked to me at the time. I remember thinking he just looked stunned, what he had just seen had stunned him. And then he became a very central character, this congressman from California. And you actually kind of developed the story, at least in part, around him. Tell us what you learned and just give us an idea of what we need to know about him.
Well, what's interesting is that basically, you know, it's so rare for people to do the right thing and tell the truth, no matter what the consequences are, no matter if it's a popular storyline or a popular narrative, that it becomes, it's such a rare trait that it's just so noteworthy, where basically he was the only one. I think that if there had been somebody else in his position, I don't think we would know about this. If it weren't for him, we wouldn't know that the entire Russiagate narrative was a hoax, because he had just the honor and the integrity to tell the truth and to really chase it down and to get to the bottom of it and prove it once and for all. It wasn't a case of battling narratives. They proved it. They had over 65 people come in under oath, and these are the same people that are going on TV every day saying that they have evidence of Russian collusion when under oath they say they don't have any evidence at all. And the fact that the media isn't just hammering that point across is every single day is just shocking. But the main thing I learned about Devin is, you know, I want to remind people, it's not like he was like some really outspoken, you know, MAGA guy. He didn't come in with Trump. He didn't, he's a fairly, traditional Republican guy who has this, who was the head of the Intel Committee, and he just did the right thing. You know, it's not like he had an agenda. In fact, he suffered a lot of really awful things because of doing the right thing and because of speaking the truth. You know, they went after his family. They removed him as chairman of the committee. They pursued him to this day. And it's really a shame. And that's what it takes, you know, is somebody with moral courage like that to stand up and do the right thing.
It's funny you should mention removing him as chairman from the committee. That makes a point that I just talked with Congressman Andy Biggs before you joined us. And it's been a pattern, you know, in Congress for the leadership to remove those icky troublemaking people that actually do speak the truth. They're punished for the most part. So are you saying that Devin was removed from his chairmanship by the leadership, in the Republican leadership?
We don't go into that in a ton of great detail because it is, you know, part of what I gathered from him and his team was that actually that enabled them to chase this down even better, because they were able to get to the bottom of the actual truth instead of having to, you know, it actually helped their ability to go.
Yeah, I can understand that. Not constrained.
It's hard to explain, but it's like, yeah, it actually helped them because they weren't the center target all the time anymore. But at the same time, they went after him with phony ethics complaints. They harassed his family. He had mountains, just reams of ridiculous fake news hit pieces written about him, his staff, which at the time was unheard of. They didn't go after staffers back then. I mean, you really don't hear about that, and they did that. And it really just shows the kind of trials that he had to withstand, and, you know, just because he stood up and did the right thing, because he absolutely went against the mob and even the Republican mob. I mean, there wasn't like he was joined by a big committee of people who, in the beginning, who supported it. I mean, most people were staying silent. Most people were not standing up. I mean, he really did. He saw the dossier and he said, "This is crazy, and I want to know where it came from."
You know what shocked me? No, it was refreshing. He not only showed courage on that day, but he hung on to that and stood steadfast like a bulldog. I mean, he was not going to let that go, and he did not let them dissuade him. That's part of the amazing story here. All right, so when did the movie, the documentary, actually, when was it released so that people could see it?
It was released about 2 weeks ago. Interestingly, it was supposed to be released on most of the platforms all at the same time. It was released on Vimeo On Demand and two subscription platforms, both of which I recommend. One of them is called My Movies Plus. The other one is specialproject.io. And those are going to be new platforms that are free speech friendly, that are not about censorship. And so we launched the movie with them 2 days early to support those platforms, and everyone should. They're Patriot-owned. And then it was on Vimeo On Demand, and it was supposed to be on Amazon that, you know, 2.5 weeks ago, and they held it for an unheard of 12 days, which in this, you know, this time of year is every day counts, and it's just a really long time. And usually their review process is 3 days. They held onto the movie for 12. Our distributor has over 350 titles on Amazon. He said he's never seen anything like that before. So as soon as The Hollywood Reporter did a story about Amazon holding the film, all of a sudden the next day it's up. So we're just thankful for that. At least it's up, it's out. Everybody can do it. Everybody, you know, I don't like being dependent on these platforms, but it does make it a lot easier for everybody to see it. So,
what's the response been?
It's been overwhelming. I mean, we're the most reviewed political doc of all time, and we have only been available for a week, I think, maybe less than a week on Amazon. And it's the number one documentary. I don't think it's going anywhere because, I don't think they're going to try and remove it because it's their number one documentary right now. So I think the response has just been completely overwhelming. I mean, people love the movie, which is great. And it's changing hearts and minds, and it's opening people's eyes up to what happened because the media wants us to forget.
Amanda, you are a national treasure. Who would have known? And I bet your dad is bursting at the seams with pride to see the art that he sort of exampled for you, blended with his passion for truth and for the country. And to see that fulfilled in his daughter must be very, very, very fulfilling for him. The movie is called The Plot.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. The movie's called The Plot Against the President. You can see it on Amazon Prime or go to My Movies Plus. Whatever you have to do. And that's how you can obtain it. Amanda Milius, thank you, Amanda. I look forward to seeing you again. This is great stuff. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.